back. WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively taking the show on the road in unlikely circumstances, I might add. We're going out to Los Angeles. All of our Maryland Lottery Crab Cake Tour is put back together. We're going to start that on March 4th. So we got bigger and better things ahead as we step in to February here. This guy's going to step into the cockpit and fly the plane from 3 until 5, as he does on Thursdays and again on Sunday morning. Welcome, Dennis Palazzo's back on from Coons Ford, amongst many sending me out to L.A. and great sponsors who've Royal Farms. And you can't get Royal Farms out in California as well, so I have to take that with me. You know, Dennis, I didn't know I was going 3 weeks ago. I didn't think I certainly wouldn't have put a bus trip together to Buffalo for the Ravens 3 weeks ago. It feels like the Omicron thing, a little bit of that. But more than that, this feels like a fascinating Super Bowl with the Rams and L.A. and Joe Burrow. This fantasy season of the NFL has really turned out to have an interesting plot here at the end with Joe Burrow, I think.
Yeah, I don't think anyone saw these two teams being in the Super Bowl, and the star power, star factor is certainly going to be there. They flashed to the crowd in the game when you saw Jessica Alba, Leonardo DiCaprio. They come to mind, and your press row is going to be filled with stars, Nestor. But what a game, and you're very fortunate to be going out there. I got a notification for Ticketmaster this morning. Nosebleed started $6,000 a ticket, and I stopped right there. I went no further. Very, very, it's going to be a fantastic game. Bengals have certainly a lot of momentum. You have the Matthew Stafford story on the Rams side. I'm excited about this game. I think it's going to be a fantastic game and a fantastic venue.
Imagine if you were Dennis Colazzos at Coons Ford of Covington, Kentucky right now, or, you know, Cincinnati dealerships or whatever. You talk about $6,000. It's once in a lifetime for the Bengals, right? But maybe not. And I think that's where Luke and I, on the football side, where we really begin to say, I like Joe Burrow too much for him to be in the division. I mean, I never really liked Peyton Manning out of because of the horseshoe in the beginning. I sort of like him on TV now a little bit more. But I'm old school wrestling like you, right? You either like the Valiant Brothers or you didn't. You either like rooted for Bruno and Bobo or you rooted for the bad guys. I don't know where the bad guy is in this. Matt Stafford, his wife's been through all this. Whitworth came over from the Bengals, and that makes it interesting for me. Both the coaches are young and connected to each other. I mean, there's no black hat in this thing, but we really have to reexamine the Bengals after this. I guess that's where we are with the Steelers, where we are with the Browns, who we are. But the Bengals have now, they've jumped onto the table with Joe Burrow in a second year, and it feels to me like the next couple, 3, 5, 6 years, this is trouble for the Ravens, as I see it.
They're going to be a tough out, particularly when you look at their offensive line. If they can shore up that offensive line, I mean, this team really doesn't have many weaknesses. They'll draft for defense as well, but we always see it in the playoffs that the best team doesn't always win. It's a team that's healthy and hot, and the Bengals are both. They're playing fast and loose. I don't know if the stage is so big they don't realize how big it is. Maybe in the 2 weeks leading up to the game, it'll sink in, particularly to a young player like Joe Burrow. But he has played for a national championship. He's played in front of 100,000 person crowds in college before. He went into a very tough situation in Kansas City. You've been at that stadium many, many times, Nestor. You know how loud it is in there. And to come out of there with a victory, and, you know, the give them credit. I mean, the Chiefs did nothing in the second half, and that first half ending, having the ball on the 1 yard line and coming away with 0 points was a epic, catastrophic failure by Andy Reid and company. It's inexcusable. And if that were Greg Roman and John Harbaugh, they would have been roasted from here to eternity.
Well, as it happened, okay, so, you know, I've talked a lot about this week because I'm going out to L.A. and I've talked about being at all these Super Bowls, talked about buying my big screen TV on Kane Street when I first had a little bit of money. It was the one indulgence. I didn't have any thoughts of yachts or boats or even, you know, coming and getting a big truck from you over Coons or even driving a Cadillac or anything. I didn't have any of the. I wanted a TV to watch the Super Bowl on that was as big as the wall. That's all I wanted when I was 21 years old. Like, that's what I did with my money from the sun. Maybe chase some girls, went to Hammer Jackson. But I literally watching that Super Bowl was the first Super Bowl I watched on my big TV. And it was a great game in Taylor and Montana. It was in Miami and all that. And I thought maybe one day I'll get to go to one Super Bowl. Right now I'm working. It's my 28th and I don't watch them on TV anymore. I don't get to see the commercials, but the championship games for a good 15 years, I went to the championship game, you know, either the AFC or NFC. That's how I met Billick at an NFC championship game in Minnesota. I went to those games and I usually watch sports at home for that kind of game. I mean, come on, the Ravens were in three or four of those recent, in the last 15 years. We were at those games, but those are the games that I watch. I'm tweeting. I'm, you know, in my own big screen TV that's now like 30, it's smaller than the one I had on Kane Street, because I get overwhelmed by one of those Vegas TVs. And we watched it in a bar and we went to Chaucer and we were socially distanced as best we could. We felt safe enough, but like we were in an environment where the first half of that game was like, it looked like the Bengals were going to lose 42-10. And then it turned, and the vibe of all of it and being in a different kind of environment than even at home, to feel the ups and downs, to hear people saying they were gambling, to have people that say they grew up in Cincinnati wearing Burrow stuff. There are people in the room who grew up in Kansas City wearing Chiefs hats and stuff. It was fun. And it was like a different kind of fun than I even have in a press box or even in the stands where it's all Ravens, but just being in a vibe where the stakes were high and so unlikely. If you're a Bengals fan, you've had no fun in your life. Like literally, right? Seriously, think about what it would have been like to be Coons Ford of Cincinnati or Nasty Nestor of WKRP in Cincinnati. You know, like how bad that would have been the last 30 years to witness this.
And Harold Hessman, he just passed away from the show WKRP. You know, prayers up for him.
Great. Yeah, Johnny Fever.
Dr. Johnny Fever, baby. He was great on that show, as was Lonnie Anderson and many other cast members. But you're right. The Bengals fan base has suffered for a very, very long time. They've had heartbreaking losses. And they've had a miser in the owner, Mr. Brown over there. And he's still getting beat up about not spending enough money. He's still, I think, $60 million below the cap. He's still not spending money. And he has also shown maybe you don't have to break the piggy bank to get to the show and perhaps even win it, right? But they deserve a measure of success like all fan bases. And I believe it's their time. It seems to me that the Bengals Nest are a team of destiny. I certainly wouldn't bet against them. I'm not saying I would bet for them, but
well, you get 3.5 points with them if you like them.
Oh my God, I think I'd take them even up. I mean, I think they're on a roll, and I think they're playing fast and loose. They're young, and I think most of the pressure's got to be on the bulk of the pressure's got to be on the Rams, right? They're at home, they have the home field. They're used to the beautiful stadium, by the way. My God, it's aesthetically a very pleasing to the eye stadium, and Matt Stafford's got to have some pressure on him. I know he's also playing with a measure of house money, but he's at getting towards the end of his career, whereas Joe Burrow, of course, is just starting out. He's just a baby, which is amazing.
I can root against Jalen Ramsey. I don't really dig him, but other than – and Stan Kroenke, who's, you know, I mean, it goes without saying, this whole thing underneath of the veil of all of this are these people in St. Louis that got just completely royally screwed and lied to, and apparently $900 million that the lawyers are taking good care of as well. Dennis Colazzos is here. He's with Coons Ford and Coons Baltimore Ford over Security Boulevard, and we'll be here on Thursday, and we'll be here on Sunday. I will be in L.A. next week. Comebacks and falling behind. I mean, I mentioned I was sitting over at the Chaucer in Highlandtown, and we were like, oh man, this game stinks. And then that thing happens where, and I talked to Leonard Raskin about this because he manages money, about what happens when you get a little cocky, things get a little ahead or whatever. I'm thinking, how cocky could the Chiefs have been to have squandered? I mean, it felt like that was an act of aggression where it was an all or nothing and we're going to end it right now. And I'm thinking to myself, how do you take 3 points in the biggest game of the year and just say, eh, we're cocky enough, we don't even need that? It felt to me to be like a really sloppy, like what a drunk would do in the casino at 3 a.m. You know, it felt irrational to me, and it felt very against Andy Reid. It felt very against what the Hunt family would want. I mean, I'm just blown away that I'll still go back to that. Kind of like Buck Showalter having the relief pitcher. Yeah, it was Britton sitting down in the bullpen. I'm thinking to myself, this is the AFC Championship game. Like, what are you doing? You just got 0 points, and you're cocky enough to think you're going to win by 4 touchdowns at that point.
Oh, there's no question about it. And all that play, not only that, but it defines logic. It speaks to arrogance. I thought that they thought that they could score at will, that Mahomes would drop back there and just put the ball exactly where he wanted to. And he was rolling. He was hot, but it was arrogance. They didn't play basic football. They didn't execute. It was screaming for run play at that situation. They didn't run the ball, and they found themselves in third and long, and it was a disastrous turn of events. And everyone said that if they end up losing, people would talk about that series, and rightfully so. It was really, really bad football, bad play calling, bad execution. And the Chiefs now have got it's going to be a very long offseason for them. They're going to have to retool, refigure some things out themselves, for sure.
As for comebacks in the NFL, and I talked to Luke about this a little bit as well. I remember the Oilers, and you do too. I don't need to revisit that. Although I follow Love You Blue on Twitter, and those jerseys pop up every day, and they still look damn good. I'm not going to lie to you. Every once in a while, a little old, something good or bad with Warren Moon or Dan Pastorini happens on my timeline. But when I think of those kind of comebacks, and I mean, when you see the Oiler logo, you see Frank Wright kicking their ass that day, like to some degree, because they never made it up the mountain. They never won the Super Bowl, right? Titans have certainly continued another 25 years of that tradition. But comebacks now where Tom Brady comes back from 28-3, where you see these Ravens Vikings in the snow where there's 5 scores in the last 2 minutes, or you see these crazy last 5 minutes where 28 points are scored. And I guess that speaks to pass interference and rules favoring the offense and big plays and explosives and quarterbacks that can throw the ball 60 yards to either be caught or tipped up in the air, Hail Mary'd or whatever. But these massive comebacks really speak to a different kind of makeup. And I think anytime I see Frank Reich, and I remember seeing him in Philadelphia when they won the championship a couple years ago, I think about the kind of makeup you have to have, what kind of person you are when you're losing 35-3 at anything, when you're $1 million in debt and you're up all night, you're trying to figure out, you know, when you have too many cars on the lot, you can't sell them, or you have employees and you can't pay them, or you got a payroll and you're upside down, or you got whatever thing happens in your life that would represent 35-3 and being down, or 28-3 and you're in Kansas City and you're getting your ass kicked, and they open the door by being so cocky that they couldn't even kick a field goal. Like, kicking a field goal is sacrilege in some way. But the comeback then happens, and there's something about that, whatever that is, for Tom Brady being down 28-3, whatever the comeback would be, there's more of that than we in the league. And that makes a better story all the way around. And I think it speaks to who Joe Burrow is. And that's the part that probably scares me the most, because at some point we'll be kicking the Bengals' ass 21-3 at halftime, and we'll say, oh, I remember what that kid did in Kansas City that day. In the same way you'd say that about Mahomes, right? Mahomes got down 3 or 4 touchdowns to the Texans a couple of years ago and came storming back. So when you see the possibility of doing that kind of a comeback, I don't know. I think it changes young players, and it changes your opinion of what's possible in any football game when you pull that off in the AFC Championship game in Kansas City.
Well, I also think that we can all agree that in today's NFL, in sharp contrast to back when Frank Reich was the quarterback for the Bills, it's much easier to catch up. Back then, you didn't have the pass interference. You didn't have all the rules favoring their offense. You didn't protect the players, a quarterback in particular, receivers, from devastating hits. So it's much easier these days for teams to come back. And we're seeing that time and time again. We saw the Buccaneers coming back against the Rams a week ago, and the Rams were able to stem the tide. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But I think the lesson here is, if the team is down by 3 or 4 touchdowns, unless that second takes off that clock, Nestor, the game is still in question. And I've learned a long time ago never to turn off my TV set. I have friends of mine to this day who walk away with a minute left. And you can't do that when you have guys like Mahomes and Burrows and Allen with the ball in their hands, with time left on the clock, because they can absolutely carve you up, bring you down the field quickly. They have big strike capability, but it's a fun game. We had the last 6 games we watched, 5 came down to the last play of the game, and the Rams game was the only exception where they got to pick with a minute left. But you can't ask for much more exciting football than that. I think it's great for the sport. And for the bettors out there, people that actually put money in this game, I don't know how you all do it, because to me, it's maddening. I don't know how they can keep up.
I was hoping Robbie Gould was just going to come out there and break their hearts, because I kind of like him. I had him on the show. You know, he had sat in with me maybe 10 years ago when he was kicking for the Bears. And so I'll say this about this game. That kid from the Bengals,
he's good.
He'll kick a 54-yarder with 3 seconds left to beat you. The Bengals have been pretty well assembled here. And you know, I'm going to be kissing their, you know, derrieres all next week, and all the usual suspects will be coming by talking about them, and I'll find all my Bengals buddies that I've had on, and I'm sure they'll be bringing chili down to the set to get me flatulent out on the strip. But we'll be out there. Dennis, thank you for being a part of what we do here at WNST and Baltimore Positive, and sending me to my 28th Super Bowl next week. Our friends at Wise Market sending me out as well, and you can't get any Rofo chicken out there, but I'm gonna get you out to a Maryland crab cake tour stop as well once we get this thing coming back in the spring. But I know you'll be here on Thursday and, of course, all Sunday morning during the bye week this weekend, I guess, for most. And then, of course, on Super Bowl Sunday next week, I'll be checking in with you from Los Angeles. So you going to make a prediction, or
it's hard to bet against the Bengals. What I also find fascinating is all the hate by the Raven fan base against the Bengals. It's the comparisons. Leave it alone. You're not in the playoffs. We have a long offseason. Enjoy the game for what it is, but stop hating on the Bengals. It has nothing to do with your wonderful organization, period. My goodness, to me, that's been a story. And Twitter has really changed. And that's a lot of young people on there and very vocal, have no idea what they're talking about.
But, you noticed too?
Oh, my God. It's like, guys, just give it a break. Enjoy it for what it is. The Bengals were the better team than us this year. They pinned 41 points twice against the Ravens. No excuses. Like, give them their credit, man.
Hey, how about the Ravens hire this young guy? You and I've talked about the comfort level of John Harbaugh wanting people, his people, and Luke and I, and you know, I've been managing people for 30 years, not as well as you, clearly. I mean, I'm seriously, like, I'm not good at it. I study it, but I'm not good at it. John Harbaugh is very good at it, right? You've been doing this a long time. You're very good at it. I would say from my eyes, this is a Steve Bisciotti, John Harbaugh, don't let your young guy go. I like that kid. He might be the next Ravens head coach, because that's the way they do things. And like, if you're watching this, they saw a 24-year-old kid come in their building, get up early, bust his ass, work hard. Probably reminds Eric DaCosta of another guy like Eric DaCosta, or reminds me of a guy like Eric DaCosta. And that's the way they do things there. And the fact that this kid got picked and he's the anointed one and went to work with a baby brother out in Ann Arbor and like all of that, that leads me to think this comes from the Bahamas in a boat higher up in regard to what kind of structure, because John, you're not going to be here forever, and Eric's going to be here forever, and Dick's not going to be here forever, and Steve's probably saying, I'm not going to be here forever, and I need to leave it in that kind of shape. And where the Saints are having turmoil now, and they're going to have to figure out their leadership. You see the Giants, all these organizations are figuring out their leadership. This is a time for Steve Bisciotti and John Harbaugh and Eric DaCosta, and they've decided on this very young guy that they know very, very well, that only knows their system. And I think from managing people for 3 decades, you can have an appreciation for that. And I talked to Brian last week, right? I had Billick on, who was always bring me a little bit of this and a little bit of that, and I'll go over here and get this, bring in out-of-towners. That's not the Harbaugh way. That's not the Bisciotti way at Aerotech and how you grow young managers. And we don't let our best people go manage the Browns. We're not going to let this kid McDonald go coach the Steelers. He's going to coach the Ravens. And I don't know him. I haven't met him. I don't know any, but I know they like him a lot, and like a whole lot. When you're iron 30-year-old higher up managers, you have a different thought about him, Mike McDonald.
Yeah. All things being equal, I'm also a big proponent of hiring from within, moving people up, but I'm also don't exclude talented people, players, if you will, that can also help my organization. But I like the move. I like the direction they're heading. I like the freshening of the defense. Mike McDonald fits more of that corporate image that Steve Bisciotti likes versus somebody like Rob Ryan or even Wink Martindale, although Wink did a very nice job for the Ravens. But wasn't surprised by the move. But yeah, the Ravens have a lot of work to do in the offseason. They have to build themselves now, not only to beat up on a Pittsburgh Steelers, but also how to contain that high-powered offense of the Cincinnati Bengals. They're going to be a problem for a long time, Ness.
Dennis Colazzo's here. I will be on his program on Thursday. He drives you home from 3 to 5 each and every Thursday here at AM 1570 WNST, as well as out on the front of BaltimorePositive.com and on Sunday mornings to be heard again. All right, so I wrote down, we keep a little bit of notes. I don't green room here. One of my childhood friend's father was the printer at the Sun. And my first job in 1984, I was 15 years old, came from a guy named Marty Bating, late great Marty Bating, Melissa Bating's father in Colgate on Bank Street. And he always told me he was going to get me a job at the newspaper when I was 12 years old. And when I was 15, I ran into him in the Aladdin's Castle at East Point Mall. And he got me a job with Tom Robinson down at the paper. So I got a printer in, and then up the street, Mr. Charlie was the printer. And then his son, Chuck Kilgore, was a printer at the Sun since the time I was there. He was an apprentice in 1990, 91. He's my age. He's probably 23 years old. Worked there his whole life, out of a job as of Friday and Saturday, as the Baltimore Sun doesn't print a newspaper in Baltimore. Dennis, I know you had some things you wanted to say about this.
Yeah, you know, my father, God rest his soul, he was a printer by trade in Athens, Greece. He had his own printing company before he moved to the U.S. When he came to the U.S.
Were those metal plates? Is that
metal plates? Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so that's, I developed an interest in printing because of my dad. You know, of course, our dads are usually our heroes, and I was no exception. And he was no exception to me. So when we came here, he worked for a company called Nestor Graphics for a gentleman by the name of Jim Boskus. So I would go in there and set up the type, the picas and everything else. And I went to Eastern Vocational Technical High School, where I was a graphic arts major, printing. And my first job was at a place called Downtown Press on the block. And also as a kid, I had a paper route for the Sun and the News American. So I've been covered in ink the first third of my life so far. I was knee deep in ink.
I, you know, edited I was in the Dundalk Eagle and the I newspaper and the Avenue and Ken Caldwell. I have bylines that I wrote for Ken Caldwell down on Eastern Avenue, 1984, 85. He had that football team that he was always involved with, football and semi-pro football. And yeah, you know, I delivered the Dundalk Eagle, 10 cents I got, and I took that money. And you know what I did with it, Dennis? I didn't drink with it. I drank with other money. I used that on girls. I went roller skating. I used my Dundalk Eagle money and my baseball card money, because I had a whole baseball card thing. I dealt baseball cards in the neighborhood. I talked to Mel Lundgren. By the way, I have a card mania up in Bel Air Mall. I did a whole segment on baseball cards last week, and I can't get enough of it. Like people are sending me little notes about Sixto Lescano and Brooks Robinson rookie cards. So my childhood's coming back. But it was about baseball cards, delivering the newspaper, and skating backwards. All skate slowly and carefully at Skateland. How about that?
You probably had one girl on each hand, you know, when you were skating there, when it turned out the lights at midnight.
The magic was when you could learn to skate backwards, then girls would skate with you. But until then, you know, and look at all the trouble it got me into. Dennis Colazzo's is here. Yeah, he will sell you a newer pre-loved vehicle. Then how are we doing on stock? What's going on out there? We up to President's Day. We have a tailgate special. We got a Super Bowl special. We got a Joe Burrow Bronco. I mean, what do we got?
We have a scarcity special. You better come get the vehicle before somebody else does. We have 150 brand new ones here, over 200 pre-loved, but we have more than most dealers in the region and the East Coast, and they're selling very, very fast. So anyone who identifies a vehicle they're interested in, get it today, because if you come here tomorrow, chances are it won't be here. So business is very good, very brisk, and we're getting them. They're coming in by the truckload every day in us.
You know what I love? You and I, blue collar, you know, sons of immigrant, kind of like all of that. And you drop a big word on me like scarcity, right? So you threw that in. And I remember the first time I ever heard the word scarcity, it was in regard to the Honus Wagner baseball card. That was scarce.
We need Coach Billick on our show here so we can have a lexicon so we can understand what the man is saying. My vocabulary is nowhere near what yours or his is. By
are your trucks as scarce as the 70 bench or the 75 Brett or the Cal Ripken rookie card or the Billy Ripken funny at the bottom of the back card? You know, I don't know. It's scarce.
They are scarce as hen's teeth. When you see hen's teeth, that's how you know how scarce they are.
Dennis Kalatsos is here. He'll be back here on Thursday driving you home from 3 until 5 with the Dennis Kalatsos show, as well as out on Twitter and social media and at the front of BaltimorePositive.com. I'm Nestor. I'll be in L.A. next week. I'll be wearing the Maryland Lottery mask. You mentioned your dad and how much you love your dad. My dad's birthday is March 5th. We're going to bring back the Maryland Crab Cake Tour on the eve of my pop's birthday. Nice. March 4th, we're going to be down at Mama's on the Half Shell down in Canton. We're going to kick it off. And then we're going to get back into this and start eating some crab cakes proper. I brought me some Crab Imperial home from Costas the other night. I got fresh English muffins at Wise, and I made cheddar cheese. I recreated, no offense to Costas or Fadley's, any of my spots, I recreated the Burke's crab melt. And I'm telling Nick, they're going to bring it to, I'm bringing back crab melt on top of come crab cake. It's going to be my gift to everybody, is we're going to find the perfect crab melt and make that part of the lexicon. He is Dennis. I am Nestor. We're around here. We're WNSD AM 1570 Towson, Baltimore, making you hungry, talking Baltimore Positive.